Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you. The phone lines are open, and to get to us, our number is 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number to use, 941-3689, or from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Food's a natural thing. It gets digested in bodies, so what's the harm in having food waste just popped into the trash? Well, according to the EPA, there's plenty, both physical and moral, with one in five Americans going hungry and 40% of what we buy in the grocery store consigned to the trash where it outgasses methane in landfills. The question perhaps we should be asking is, how do we prevent the harm? This morning, we started the discussion with visiting EPA Regional Administrator Jared Blumenfeld. Tonight on Town Square, we'll continue the conversation with several participants in the Food Waste Challenge announced yesterday. Kule Williams is here. She's the executive director of Aloha Harvest. The nonprofit organization gathers excess quality donated food from hotels, restaurants, food distributors, catered events, and then delivers all of it to over 159 social services agencies, feeding the hungry and homeless throughout Oahu. Also here is Josh Prigge. He is the sustainability coordinator at Hawaii Pacific University, where he also received his Master of Arts in Global Leadership and Sustainable Development. He's a member of the board of directors for the Sustainability Association of Hawaii. And finally, Nicole Chatterson joins us. She works for the local youth development and conversation nonprofit Kupu and is a mentor for RISE, an internship program focused on sustainability and green workforce development in Hawaii. And of course, you're here too. And again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for being here.
Aloha. Thank you for having us.
This is a conversation that on one hand seems as if it might be an easy fix to something that we know is a problem. We know people are hungry. We know that food winds up in the trash and it shouldn't, and there are things that we could potentially do that might change that. But changing the mindset to make all of that happen first is a bigger mountain to climb. Plus, you have different places where people are on that continuum of understanding that we are a very small place, and in this finite landmass, we have only certain places that are suitable for landfills. We've been looking what to do with our trash for decades. And yet, with all the urgency of all those things, it doesn't seem to be that a lot of people realize what's happening with food waste. Have I characterized that in any way inappropriately, Josh?
No, I think that's exactly the issue. It's a moral thing. It's an environmental concern. I think when you look at all these numbers of 15% of people in America, they don't know where their next meal is going to come from. While at the same time, 40% of Americans are obese and 40% of the food is being thrown away. There's a disconnect there, and there's an issue that needs to be solved.
We're in Hawaii where we think that we are pretty good people. We're pretty good about helping neighbors and friends and people we don't even know whenever there's a problem. But for ongoing issues like this, have we lost this sense of moral imperative? Nicole, when you talk to young people, they seem to get that idea a little bit better than the rest of us, or am I being unkind to the rest of us?
I think the rest of us are largely products of a consumer culture and a culture of abundance. And I think that's part of where the food waste problem is stemming from. And I think what I see with youth is we're starting to notice the errors of our own ways and how we're choosing to live in abundance. And we're working to communicate how the youth can choose to live differently.
There was a whole movement in the 80s about living in abundance and creating abundance, but this wasn't exactly what some people had in mind or that would be a healthy situation. Kule, you're in some ways the recipient of this type of thinking in that you've been able to create a mechanism for getting the excess food to people who really need it. But it seems in some ways, given the poundage that you've been putting out there, since 1999 in collecting and redistributing that you're almost a victim of your own success.
That's very true. And we have been successful, and we are really grateful for that. And we are thankful for the partners that we have that make it possible for us to collect the excess and be able to give it to social service agencies that are feeding the hungry and homeless. But being successful is, you feel good because you're helping so many people out there. A lot of them don't know where their next meal comes from. But at the same time, you're realizing how much excess is out there and that it's still so much out there. And so many more people need to be aware of what it is and how they can help to reduce it, to especially we pick up the food that is still good for human consumption. And a lot of them is still going into the waste that's being fed to the pigs. And if they can just have a mindset change to realize that they can make a difference in our community just by simply changing where they're putting that waste instead of in the waste barrel in our containers and donating it out.
Wow us with some of those numbers that you pick up on a weekly basis, an annual basis, how many thousands of pounds of food?
It is pretty staggering. The 13 years that we've been in, we just went over 10 million pounds of food that we've kept from being thrown in the landfill. And putting that into tonnage, that's 5,000 tons of food that we've kept from being in there.
And tonnage that went into tummies instead.
Yes. And we are helping to feed about 70,000 people a month with that. And we are working with 159 social service agencies who are feeding the hungry and homeless out there.
Now, you'd probably like not to be as successful as you are if there were a mechanism to get people fed and you didn't have to run around and do all of this stuff. And if restaurants and hotels and caterers would understand how much waste there is. In some ways, you do needs assessments for them by letting them know how much they're wasting.
That's correct. And by making them aware of the poundage that we're picking up, we're grateful for those donations because it's not going to in the trash can. But at the same time, making them aware that they can reduce how much they're producing and maybe do things a little bit different. And when we had the economic downfall a few years ago, a lot of them went to prepare as you order. And so that saved a lot of things. But there's still a lot of items that you have to prepare in large quantities, like lasagna, soups, and things like that. And so we are making them aware of everything that they are producing. And for some of them, it has made a difference. They've really not noticed before on a real conscious basis. But now that they are donating to us and we're showing them the poundage that they've been donating to us, they're stepping back and they're seeing how they can either reduce production or maybe do it differently.
Really, there's several issues tied up into all this. We all call it food waste, but it's different forms of food waste. The type that you just talked about, Kule, is a kind that you can actually pick up and it's fit for human consumption and redistributing that so it doesn't wind up where the two of you would like to see it not wind up, which is just popped into the trash and thrown into a landfill where it's going to decompose and create methane. For those of you just joining us tonight, we're talking about food waste. Do you stop to think before you put something in the trash, those scraps of food, bits of things that could go into compost, or if it's good food and you're a restaurant, caterer, hotel, thinking about perhaps finding a way to bring it to people who can use it, obviously quickly, do you stop to think before you let go of any of the food that is in your possession? 941-3689-877-941-3689. If you're a restaurateur, if you own a catering business, we want to hear from you. And if you're someone who is just at home and you know that you pop things into the trash that perhaps you shouldn't have you thought about doing something different in your behavior? And what would it take to change your behavior? We want to hear. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Sometimes that behavior can be changed simply by having somebody else change it for you. In the case of college students, not having trays so they can't pile on as much food. We know that college kids do waste a lot of food. What is it, a pound per person?
I'm not sure the exact numbers, but yeah, they do waste a lot. We've been tracking some of it, and we've been putting some programs in place to help educate our students. We have a program called Weigh the Waste Wednesday, in which we weigh all of the food waste from breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and we put it on a chart, and we display it prominently in the cafeteria so that the students know exactly how much food they're wasting every day. And then what we do is encourage and challenge them to reduce that number every week. Because an important part of this is, you know, reducing your consumption so that we don't have to deal with the waste afterwards.
I mean, that's the whole point of the zero waste that the EPA has been talking about now for quite a while, particularly in California.
Exactly. So you want to reduce the waste that's created by reducing that demand, first of all, and then whatever is left over you want to take care of in a responsible way. So behavior change, education, and awareness is I think, the first step, the most important step. And so many people just, I think they just don't know. When they think of food waste going to the landfill, most people think maybe it just biodegrades or it goes into the soil, but they don't know about the effect on the methane that's released into the atmosphere, which is actually 20 times stronger than carbon dioxide. And then you have the entire food production process of growing food, watering it, fertilizing it, processing it, transporting it. You have all this energy and water and resource that's being used to produce this food and transport it. And if we're throwing 40% of that away, that means we're wasting 40% of that energy and that water. So I think education and awareness is an important first step.
What you're really saying is that people don't understand the food chain, which is something that you deal with a lot, Nicole, in trying to make youth understand where it comes from. It's not like, oh, gee, where did that, you know, beef come from? Oh, Safeway.
Right.
You know, and a lot of little kids just simply see that and understand that. And we, you know, over time, have been trying to shift their perspective. And we've had a lot of, you know, farm-to-table movements, growing gardens in the schools, all of that. But that's still only one facet of it. We need a fuller understanding of really where all of these things go on the continuum between or that starts with food production and what goes into food production and what happens as it splits off into what actually goes into you and what winds up into the trash. So what do you do to be able to start some of those larger conversations?
I think one of the first steps is getting kids and the general public in touch with the food producers. The farmers market is a great way to do that. You touched on it, Beth Ann, that largely people understand their food as coming from the supermarket. And when you're taking that perspective, food is a commodity. It's not a valuable resource. And, you know, to that end, the farm-to-table movements that are happening, I think, are keying in to what the need is in spreading the understanding about food waste.
And growing their own food as well. I think when you grow your own food at home, I think you're putting more value in that. You value it much more. You're taking care of it. You're watching it grow. There's a lot less waste involved.
Equity into all of that, right? And that's something that we used to have when we had summer gardens or in the, you know, war years when generations passed where there was the victory garden, other things that gave you an appreciation of what that meant to actually have food that nourished you and sustained you as opposed to simply being a commodity that a consumerist society can take or leave or throw out at will. We've got a caller on the line. If you'd like to join us, we want to hear how you feel about food waste and some of your behavioral changes perhaps that you've made in the last little while or some that you'd like to make. 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689. Or if you call us from the Neighbor Islands, it's 877-941-3689. Going to Phyllis calling us from IAEA. Aloha, Phyllis. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm calling because I heard a little bit of your conversation. And what I do for my food waste is I'm a vegetarian. And so what I do is I have a worm bin and I have a compost bin. And I'd like to suggest to a lot of people that it'd be very possible to recycle your kitchen waste that way.
Can I ask you, Phyllis, how much did you have to invest to be able to get your worm bin and your compost bin?
You know, there are cheaper methods of getting. I purchased the actual formal worm bin, which was probably about $250. But you can get it a heck of a lot cheaper. You can make your own. I actually am part of the Master Gardener program at the University of Hawaii Cooperative Extension, and we do demonstrate how to make worm bins and how to and what to do with your kitchen waste.
So you can do it for cheap.
I'm sorry?
So you can do it for cheap. You don't have to go off and
spend.
You can
get it for cheap. You can do it for like maybe $35, that's $40, and that includes the cost of the worms.
Which kind of makes you wonder that if, you know, things like this are inexpensive and we know that we are in a small place, a small island, why don't we do it? Any thoughts on that one? Why people who you know who clearly understand that you're doing this don't do it too?
People who live in apartments, they think, oh, you need a lot of space, and so it's just easier. It's ease to throw it in the trash. And the some people have a yuck factor to worms. Let's see. And I guess, I hate to use the word laziness, but it does take a little bit of work, but it's not that much work when the outcome, what you get out of it, the return is so much worth it.
So what do you do with all that compost soil that you have? Does that go into your plants, or do you give it to other people?
Personally, it goes into my plants. And at the Urban Garden Center, what we do is we have a huge garden that we put back into our plants. So it fertilizes, provides nutrients to our soil and our plants.
Well, Phyllis, thanks so much for calling. We
appreciate
it. You're welcome.
I hope everyone can join us or come down to the Urban Garden Center.
And you'll show them how to do it. And you'll show them how to do it for very little money, too. Thanks, Phyllis.
Okay.
You know, the yuck factor. Yeah, I got to tell you, there's somebody in my household who say, I'm not having those worms on my lanai. And, you know, those of you who know my mother know that's just not something that she was going to do until she figured out that there really wasn't a yuck factor to it. There wasn't as much of a yuck factor as she had imagined. And I've heard this from other people, too. Is that something we just need to get over?
I think there's also the other method. The bokashi bucket is another method with no worms involved. You just kind of, you put some microorganisms into it. You do have to bury it eventually. But, you know, if people have a fear of worms, they can go with the bokashi. And we did a large pilot project out at HPU. One of our students worked with Each One Teach One Farms to try to do the bokashi method on a large scale. So they were taking all of our cafeteria waste and composting it right on site at HPU. And they composted a little over 3,000 pounds of food on a large scale to try to develop this process for commercial organizations.
And how much compost did that yield?
I'd have to look at the paper. A student wrote a research paper on it, so I'm not sure how much compost it produced.
But that stayed at HPU, and you just used it
exactly
for the plants around there.
Yep, and we kept it. We have an organic garden down there, so we're trying to eventually work towards, you know, a closed loop system between our cafeteria and our garden.
Now, makers of fertilizer might not like this idea a whole lot, but still, the idea of being able to close that circle and keep a closed system at home seems to be, you know, rather intriguing. How much really do you expect people to do by watching the examples of that we've been talking about over the last couple of days about the food waste challenge? Where's the starting point, Nicole?
I think a great starting point is changing the way you think about the food that you're eating and what waste actually is. So, for example, one of the there's pre-consumer and there's post-consumer food waste. So an example of pre-consumer food waste would be your carrot shavings. Most of us shave our carrots. You can also wash your carrot. You can also wash your potatoes and save that skin from becoming something that that isn't ingested. For me, that was an easy starting point, changing the way that I viewed food. And I think a great next step is something like a worm bin. It's really low maintenance. You don't actually have to touch the worms. Eventually you harvest the vermicast, but you can find a friend to do that for you if you'd like.
The point of it is that you've got to start with a thought.
Right. Where all of
this started in the first place, mm-hmm. but how you put that thought into action and actually understanding that, you know, the food in your hand, if you're not going to eat it, it's going to go someplace. So, where is it going to go? And then what does that mean down the line, especially when it comes to the stuff that winds up in the landfill? It's one thing if you're a restaurant or a caterer or a hotel and you have a conduit like you, Kule, mm-hmm. and you're going to pick it up and take it and redistribute it because we know we have hungry people. And taking care of the hungry is something that we can do in this way or in other ways. But that doesn't necessarily justify the fact that there should be this kind of food waste,
right?
Which is what you've said. Then there's, the other issue about knowing that if you're on kitchen duty at home, that you need to do something other than just open the trash bin and throw it down there or even put it into the disposal too.
I really think part of the larger issue too is time management, and we're leading really busy lives, and it's difficult sometimes to step back and complete, you know, your dinner in a way that might take you 5 extra minutes. And I think a lot of food waste is generated that way, and that also speaks to the production process of food. So Josh mentioned growing your own. And when you're growing your own food, you're actually removing waste at a level of the food supply chain that we don't really think about. For instance, tomato sauce. When we open up the can of pasta sauce and put it on our noodles, all of the skins that went into making those tomatoes were actually waste. So making your own food, growing your own food, is an automatic reduction in waste.
But if you're cooking and you've got a recipe that says you want to skin those tomatoes, you're still skinning the tomatoes. So you're just saying that if you're doing it at home and you think about what you're going to do with those things afterward, then you've got a different plan than if you simply just open up a can. So what I'm getting to with all this is it's not just a few things that you do at home, but it's back ending into a whole conversation about food. And we keep having these conversations about what food really, the purpose of food. Is this something just to enjoy because it tastes good and it's fun and we enjoy it? Is it an amount of nourishment? Is it all of those things? People like Michael Pollan, don't eat anything bigger than your head, all kinds of things that we've heard along the way, but still looking at the relationship that we have to food and then how that fits into our lives collectively, particularly as we're on this little tiny island.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to keep the way you like to eat and also know that you're not adding to a great big mess in a landfill that has increasingly, fewer and fewer places for all this stuff to go?
That's really true. It's encouraging for me to see the elementary schools beginning to teach the children about growing their own food. Speaking with a few people who have experience working with the children on that, this is the first time they've ever seen something grow from the ground. And because, like Nicole said earlier, you go to the grocery store and it's there. They don't think about where it came from. And for them to experience that has really, I think, changed a lot of families, or is changing some of the families, because their children are bringing that education back home and saying, how come we aren't growing our own vegetables? And encouraging that, or doing the worm gardening or the composting. And so I'm excited to see that in the elementary schools in the younger ages, we're starting that again. When I grew up, we grew our own vegetables. We did canning, we did freezing and all of that. And you don't see a whole lot of that these days. And I think it's a wonderful thing that we should promote.
In fact, that there are certain places around town where classes are being offered.
Correct.
And all of these things that our grandmothers knew
Yes. And
could do. And Yeah. Suddenly it's gotten not just, cool again, but of necessity to
Yes. Be
able to do
Yeah.
that. If you're just joining us tonight, we're talking about food waste. Come on, you know when you get in the kitchen and you look at the stuff in your hand, what are you going to do with those peelings? What are you going to do with those bits and pieces? Well, for a lot of people, they just pop them into the trash. Is that you? And could you be looking at a better way of putting that food waste to better use by making sure that it turns into compost or doesn't wind up in a landfill? 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. We're all on small islands here. What are you doing with your food waste? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. You're listening to Town Square. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
The Island Oasis Ensemble presents Belly Dancing in HBR's Atherton Studio on Saturday, June 29th at 7:30. The exotic evening will feature belly dancers Masayo and Kalai, accompanied by live music, and will introduce you to belly dancing's cutting edge, the new style of tribal fusion which combines traditional dance styles with hip-hop, breakdance, and other new moves. A full band will back up the dancers for a rollicking evening. Reservations, call 955-8821 during business hours.
Not everyone comes to HPR's website looking for program information. Some folks want to support the station but aren't quite sure how. Maybe you want to make a monetary contribution, or maybe you want to contribute time as a volunteer but don't know what kind of work is needed. Well, if you go to hawaiipublicradio.org and click on Support HPR, you'll find links to all different kinds of involvement. The HPR website, it's just a click away.
I listen to Hawaii Public Radio all the time, usually while I'm in my car, driving from one place to another. I love the news programs on public radio. I love listening in the morning and getting a good synopsis of what's going on for the day, and then the commentary that breaks it down. And I feel like it's good, solid news that I can trust.
Member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Radio with vision. Listen and see.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Tonight we're talking about food waste. What do you do with all those scraps of food? Are you composting? Do you have a worm bin? Are you making sure it doesn't wind up somewhere in a landfill, all those food scraps? You're making sure we don't have more methane that's being generated by all that decomposed food. You know, it's easy to think that you just throw it in the ground and somehow, some way, it's just going to wind up being soil. But that's just not the case. We have three folks around the table tonight who are all involved in some way of the Food Waste Challenge. Kuule Williams is the executive director for Aloha Harvest, and her nonprofit picks up food that otherwise would go to waste, food that can be eaten by people who are hungry and homeless throughout Oahu, food from hotels, restaurants, distributors, you name it. That's what she does with the food that is already there. On the other side of the spectrum, we have Josh Prigge, who is the sustainability coordinator at Hawaii Pacific University, and Nicole Chatterson, who works for Youth Development and Conversation nonprofit Kupu, also a mentor for RISE, which is an internship program focused on sustainability and green workforce development in Hawaii. Both of them are looking at how do you change behavior so you don't have all this waste, and what do we do to make sure we don't throw all this stuff into the landfill when this food is obviously not fit for human consumption and it's got to go somewhere. It doesn't yield a lot of energy when it's burned by H-Power. So what's the best and highest use of all that food waste? Well, they say it goes back to understanding that we don't want to waste the water that went into producing it. We don't want to waste the energy that could otherwise come out of it if it turns into compost. So we got to all rethink what we're doing with our food waste. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, our phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. And going to Kathy, calling us from Honolulu.
Hi. Manoa,
to be more specific. Yes, hi there, Kathy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Sure. I'm a local chef. I'm a private chef and a caterer. And chefs are trained not to waste food. So to give you an example, if there's leftover bread that's a little stale, you make breadcrumbs. And when the breadcrumbs don't work, you turn them into croutons, and croutons turn into breadcrumbs.
So, Kathy, if all of that is so, and I believe that many chefs are trained, as you say, How is it that we wind up with so much waste? I mean, you heard Kool-Aid talk about literally now the, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds annually that they pick up from restaurants and hotels and caterers and deliver to people who need it because it's just overage that would go to waste.
Ultimately, I can't answer for every chef. I think that, one, the world has gone so fast-paced and crazy that the way a kitchen functions has changed over time, and you don't have these big kitchens that can store things the way they used to. I don't know if that makes sense, but if you make something and you save it, it costs money to refrigerate it and freeze it. When I worked in California and worked in a famous restaurant, the size of the freezer was, you could drive a truck into it.
Hmm.
It cost a lot of money to save things and freeze it and hold it and make something out of it. And I wonder if that cost influences chefs and restaurants today.
But what about actually just when you buy the food, knowing on average how much is really going out the door, out of the front door, you know, in people's tummies, and they've enjoyed it, and what gets wasted at the end of the night that has to go someplace and hopefully someplace better than the trash? I mean, how do you keep track of all of that?
I'm not a restaurant chef, so I can't answer that. For myself, I leave things either with my client, I compost myself, and my staff always takes my my compostings home too. So for myself, I can't answer that. I compost myself at home, and when I do a gig, we take things home to compost.
When you talk to other chefs, Kathy, do you have conversations about what do we do with the waste? I mean, is this part of your conversation at all?
It isn't, but, you know, I talked to a few chefs today, and it would be a really interesting conversation. A lot of them are doing pop-ups, so if you do a pop-up, that makes it really hard.
Yeah, because
you're not going to hang on to the leftovers if you're going to move on to the next pop-up.
Which is sort of where Kool-Aid and Aloha Harvest come in. Thanks so much for calling up. We appreciate it. Going now to Robin, calling us from Mililani. And if you'd like to be next, our number is 941-3689, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689. If you call us from the neighbor islands, and we want to hear from you. Food waste is everywhere, and we have finite space. How do we keep this stuff out of the landfills, get it to people who need to have what food is truly edible and quality? And what do we do with all of these food scraps to turn it into something other than just space in the landfill? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Robin, aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, thank you. A while back, a friend had told me that she had tried to compost, and this was many years ago, and then she had a lot of problems with pests such as, you know, cockroaches and mice, and that's always what stopped me from trying it myself. I wanted to know if that was a common problem or was it just something she did wrong, and like, would it matter like where I put it in my yard, if it's more in the sun or the shade, or, you know, those type of things?
You're asking all really good questions that kind of back end into how do we get over that yuck factor.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's see if we can get you some answers here. Who wants to take that first? Nicole, looks like she's answering you here.
I myself have experienced pests in compost, and what I've learned that it comes down to is the balance of food you're putting in to the rate that it's decomposing. So when you're noticing an influx of pests into your system, it means that the system isn't being handled properly. So while on one end, compost is pretty simple. You throw your food into a pile and, you know, you put some brown waste on it and you put some soil on it. There's a balance that needs to be kept.
Define brown waste so people understand what we're talking about.
So like dead leaves, yard trimmings. So it's about having a carbon to nitrogen ratio in your pile. And there is a little bit of skill and understanding, but the Master Gardeners Club is a great resource to go to for that. You can also Google backyard composting, and there's tons of wonderful resources.
And also, as we mentioned earlier, the Bokashi method, that's a, you know, it's an anaerobic fermentation process, so there should be no air. So you're doing this in an airtight bucket. So that should not attract any pests.
But obviously you have to put stuff in there. So the point of it is you put it in there and you close it and that's that.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Don't you have to have enough, though, to be able to, you know, fill the bucket to the appropriate line?
I think you put a few inches in. You cover it with the microorganisms that break down the food. And then you just seal it back up and you keep repeating that process until it's full. And then you bury it.
And how long do you have to keep it buried?
A couple weeks, I believe.
And in a couple weeks, you have fresh soil.
You bet.
All right, Robin.
Thank you.
A couple of ideas for you. Going to try this?
Yeah, I think we will. We've been talking about it, and I have kids that do it at school. But I was just worried about some issues.
Well, I mean, we all worry about those issues, too. I mean, no one wants to come home to pests and rodents and all kinds of other things who look at that and say, ah, dinner. But then again, you know, and some of it's going to be trial and error. Anyway, pop on our Facebook page and let us know how it goes.
Great, thank you.
We want to hear from you. Thanks. Going now to Carla, calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Carla. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha.
Hi there.
Yeah, I've got a couple questions. I wanted to find out what it can answer both questions after I ask. I have friends who use garbage disposals, and I cringe when I see people doing that. I wanted to ask about this method someone told me about. It's kind of the Bokashi method. But I have a friend who's got an organic farm, and he says that you can take a glass jar, fairly large glass jar, and put food waste in a nylon stocking and then cover the jar as best you can, and that eventually what will happen is you'll end up with compost tea if you put a little vinegar in there or something. Do you know anything about that? Is that the Bokashi method, sort of, making compost tea?
I've never heard of that, but it sounds delicious.
Oh, yeah. But they say that it makes the best fertilizer for, and it also is good to keep pests off the plants, too, when you use it.
Well, I tell you what, Carla, if you want to find out more about it, you can let us know.
Oh, okay. So you don't know about that method.
This is something that no one around the table has any real knowledge about. So you would like to enlighten us, that would be a good thing, too.
I've heard a bit about compost tea, but from what I understand, you could do like a raised bed compost heap, and compost tea will leak out of the bottom of that. It's kind of a leachate from the compost. So that's the references I've heard to compost tea.
All right, Carla, thanks
very
much for the call.
Okay, so what about the people using the, my brain is gone, you know, the grinder?
I mean, when we talk about the garbage disposal?
Yeah, and people use that. How do they feel about that? And is there a way to do kitchen waste if it's not smelly? And is there, besides having a great big, you know, some people don't have gardens in the back, and they just don't want the smelly, icky stuff in their kitchen. So
okay, so let's pretend that we have airspace. Somebody has a nice little place that's up there on a tower somewhere, and you may or may not have a lanai. And what do you do if you want to be a good person? You feel like you're doing something that's the right thing, and you're trying to compost. You're trying to get rid of your waste. And what you are all saying is not only just a practical but an ethical and smart way to do it. How do you go about it? What do you do first?
I would recommend the Bokashi bucket because it can fit underneath the kitchen sink. I actually have a good friend who lived in a high-rise down here in Chinatown, and she would compost. She was up on the 35th floor, and eventually you do have to go down and dump your Bokashi bucket somewhere, but there's community gardens that would take that sort of thing. So it requires another step. It's a little bit more effort. But as far as that immediate taking your food scraps and doing something with it, Bokashi bucket underneath the sink.
That sounds fairly simple. And on the 35th floor, she did
this?
Yeah. Okay, all right. You got me convinced. Thanks very much, Carla, for the question. Steve, calling us from Honolulu, is next. Thanks, Steve, for your patience. Welcome to Town Square.
Sure thing. A couple of things. One, I do a lot of compost tea. So basically, compost tea is having a good mix of compost with proper carbon and nitrogen ratios. And it's then put into like a nylon sack, like she said, but then it's put into water. And then you put in air air, like a from a aquarium or some sort of air system that goes into it, and they usually add a little bit of molasses in it. What it does is the organisms multiply, and they're live organisms. And then the material that comes out of the stock is in this water mix, and that's the compost tea. It's a live organisms, and it has to be used usually properly within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. If you put it on your, use it as an insecticide, use it as fertilizers or whatever you might use it for, you put it on your plants right away, and that's how you make compost tea.
Okay, so Steve, the part that you're using as an insecticide would be the part that's actually the liquid material, not the stuff that's in the sock.
No, not the stuff in the sock, but you can reuse the stuff that's in the sock, put it back in your compost pile, and get it growing again a little bit more, and then you put it back into the sock. It goes into, it can be just a 5-gallon bucket or a 25-gallon container, but then you need air to...
You've got to aerate it, obviously, because you've got live organisms in there.
Live organisms.
This sounds a little messy.
Then you feed them with molasses.
Yeah. This sounds a little messy, though. I mean, do this?
No, it's not really messy at all. It's very, very easy to do. So, and there's a lot of books on it, and like I'm sure the Urban Garden Center can show you how to do all those things and everything. But it's if you start to go organic, this is the best way. It takes a little while, but I was a chemical guy for all my life, and using organics now, it's amazing the difference. It's a little bit slower results from organics, but it's long term compared to regular fertilizer, chemicals, and other
ones. So you were converted, Steve. Thanks so very much for calling up and giving us
my question. I had a question.
Yeah, a question too. Okay, go ahead.
My question is that I've worked with some of these things before and with different groups, and I've found that a lot of larger organizations are really leery about giving food or other things away because of the liability. Because I've heard of quite a few other things where one person, a homeless person, or someone getting the food gets sick, and then all of a sudden they get a lawyer, and it becomes a lawsuit, and then that company or that agency is scared to give more food away because of that reason.
I think you've just articulated Kool-Aid's nightmare situations. Thanks very much. We're going to talk about that for a bit, and there are some conversations that we can have about other places in the world where there's been litigation, especially because of this, and restaurants that just don't even want to engage in it, and they'd much rather dump it because they're trying to make sure that they have no liability. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that with local restaurants?
Actually, if they are giving the excess food to a nonprofit, they are protected by the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Law, which is through the federal and state level. And in the 13 years that we've been in existence, we've never had a claim, never had any problems. And I think a lot of it is just education, because the restaurant people, they are food safe handling. They go through all the training. All of my staff goes through the food safe handling as well through the state. And then a lot of our agencies have nutritionists or dietitians on the staff as well. And we also make sure that they are keeping their refrigerations, their freezers at the levels that it should be. So if we are handling it properly, which we have been, and that's, of course, a high priority with the restaurants and the food distributors. And it becomes very important, of course, for the agencies. And so they're very aware of it as well. And so I think it's just awareness of everybody, making sure that we are handling the food properly. And like I said, the 13 years, we haven't had any
problems.
You
haven't had a problem. But we were talking a little earlier about other places in the world, particularly in Britain, where there was a case.
Right. So Tristram Stewart is a researcher in the UK. He wrote a fantastic book called Wasted. So if you're interested in this topic, I suggest that read. And he brought up a case study of a sushi restaurant in London that would intentionally overproduce the amount of sushi they knew that they could actually sell that day for a marketing scheme. They wanted perceived abundance of food. They didn't want anybody to walk in and see an empty shelf. And at the end of that day, the food they knew they were going to be wasting, they would, this was prepackaged sushi, so they would open up the sushi containers and they would destroy the sushi. They used dyes and they actually physically mushed it up. And this is because of litigation that did happen in the UK. I don't know the specifics of the case, but restaurants were actually legally attacked for leaving food out on the sidewalks and for the homeless population picking through those bags. And
which is a
waste.
Very, very different situation
right.
with what we have here, right. where food is being handled in a safe and
yes.
proper way and distributed in a refrigerated truck from a refrigerated walk-in freezer or refrigerator where you pick it up, right? So everything
right.
stays the same temperature. All of it goes mm-hmm. from one place to the other and finally
right,
to
the
people
refrigeration
who need it.
To our refrigerator trucks to the refrigeration at the agencies. I have heard of stories and actual that takes place. They're dumpster divers and they actually go in and they try and get in. So a lot of these shopping grocery stores and everything actually lock their mm-hmm. dumpsters now because that is not kept in the proper temperature.
Yeah, it's not safe. And yet for someone who is really hungry and willing to take that chance, but the store doesn't want to have the liability,
right.
the restaurant or whatever, doesn't want
exactly.
to have the liability.
And for us, that's why, you know, if they're donating the food to Aloha Harvest and we're getting it to them, we don't have the people going through the trash and
right.
trying to find their next meal in the trash can. And if we have the agencies that are providing that meal for them, then, you know, we're reducing that risk as well.
We've got Mindy calling us from McCauley. Aloha, Mindy. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, Beth Ann. I've been in the food waste recycling business for 10 years.
Would this be Mindy Jaffe?
This would be Mindy Jaffe. Hi.
Hi there.
And I just want to say that there is no food waste. It is simply unappreciated resource. And what you got to learn to do is figure out what to do with the stuff, and then you get pretty excited at how valuable it is. Can I tell you what we're doing at Pearl City High School?
Sure.
Okay. This is a pretty exciting program. We're now in our second year. We are turning 100% of their organic waste, that includes their paper, cardboard, and about 500 pounds a day of food waste, into soil, fertilizer, animal feed, and fuel. We're using simple, natural technologies, including hot composting, worm composting, bokashi, and the black soldier fly larvae, BSFL. The black soldier fly is, no one's mentioned it, but it's a magnificent creature that is less of a decomposer than a bioconverter. These guys will eat five times their weight a day in food. They'll eat meat and all kinds of greasy, yucky stuff. They, at the point that we harvest them, they are 36% fat, 42% protein. We crush them up, make a protein cake that will go to make a local chicken feed, and we take their oil and in high school chemistry labs turn it into biofuel. So every bucket of slops we run across, we ooh and ah, because that is gold. And we've really gotten the kids to start thinking that way. And it's
not hard to do,
because once you start making valuable products from your food waste, it's not waste anymore, it's resource.
Which kind of goes to the other side of it. Does that in some way inhibit people from not making so much waste to begin with?
Well, a lot of it's inevitable. Unfortunately, at the schools, for all kinds of reasons, it's monumental. A tiny school like Palolo Elementary will put out 20 tons of food waste a year because of school waste policy, school lunch policy, because of portion issues with federal mandates, and kids don't eat huge plates of lunch, and they don't eat a lot of the stuff that they serve them. So mostly it's just a pass-through, and we capture that, we hot compost it, put it in our worm bin, make bokashi, turn it into something. Yeah, we would love to not have to work so hard.
We would love
if we could cut that down.
Yeah,
it would really help a lot. But at least we're stopping the bleeding, because the food waste that is generated, we can capture and turn it into something good.
Right, which is really good that you're able to do that in the situation that exists now. But from a public policy standpoint, what do we do to change all that food that, as you say, is a pass-through? We know kids don't eat a lot at lunch sometimes, so they just throw it in the trash.
Someone needs to be looking at the school lunch policy, because they serve up heaping plates of food to children whose stomach is the size of your fist. Little kids don't eat that much. They will pick at a little bit of the canned peaches and throw the rest away. So they're feeding kids too much. They don't give them long enough for lunch. It's unfamiliar food. Often it's not tasty food, and I found that they restrict the amount of salt that they let people use in the recipes in our kitchens. So there's not much flavor to it. It all gets thrown away.
So there are a lot more issues here than just food waste. Yeah.
But a lot of people are afraid of it because there's so much packed into both state and federal legislation. And Michelle Obama, God bless her, you know, with all of the great intents and purposes, getting kids to eat more fruits and vegetables, when you pile that stuff on a child's plate and they have 15 minutes for lunch, they don't eat their fruits and vegetables. It goes into the trash and ends up feeding some very healthy worms.
Mindy, you brought up a lot of issues that we're going to have to tackle in another show, because that's a whole other issue about public policy and the kind of food waste that we could be stemming in a different sort of way, particularly when we're talking about, you know, kids and lunch and breakfast and the food that they get, whatever food they get at school. Thanks so much for calling in, and good work with Pearl City.
That's great.
That's fabulous work. And the fly thing, you know, sounds icky, but I want to know more about that one. Going now to Chris, calling us from the North Shore. Aloha, Chris. Thanks for your patience.
Yes, hi. Actually, before my comment, I would like to really second the black soldier fly larvae. They're a fantastic source of food.
Where were you guys earlier when we were talking about something? Nobody told us about the black fly larva.
Yeah, there is tons of information on the internet, on YouTube, all about the black soldier fly. It's a species that's already inhabiting Oahu. And it's a really great system. It's something I'm interested in doing. But what I wanted to share is I use a worm bin method that just uses 2 5-gallon buckets. And it just continually cycles and collects the compost tea at the bottom. And once a month, you take the top bucket out, you dump the compost tea on your flowers, your orange tree, whatever you have, and you're using the compost tea. And basically, you need 2 5-gallon buckets that are available at any local hardware store. One of them you leave intact and you place on the bottom to collect the tea. And the other bucket, you drill holes in the bottom of the bucket so that the tea can escape and be collected. Then in the lid for the bucket, you also drill holes for aeration. And each day when I'm cooking dinner, I cut out the parts that I'm not going to use, the stems, the banana peel, whatever you're using. And I just collect that in a bowl in my kitchen as I collect dinner. And
about collecting flies and other things that are you know, moving toward those things you don't want and looking at that and saying, that looks pretty good?
Well, each day after I prepare dinner, I walk right outside to my deck where I store this 5-gallon bucket. I open up the lid and I dump the food waste in there and I close it.
I'll tell you what, Chris, send me a recipe for all of this, and I'll post it on my Facebook page.
Well, I actually found this by looking at several worm bin solutions on
YouTube. All right, send me a link, because people are curious about all of this, and they want instructions to do it step by step. We need a step by step to do it. So if somebody sends me that, you can get to me at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. or directly at B.A. Kozlovich, B-A-K-O-Z-L-O-V-I-C-H, at hawaiipublicradio.org, and I'll post it. Because this is sounding like, A, it's not difficult to do, it's not expensive to do, and it might be really good for some of my plants that are going wanting. So I want it too. Thanks so much for calling.
Yes, thank you for getting this message out. It's a great topic.
And I love the fact that you cook dinner every night.
Well, sometimes it's not my turn.
But you do it anyways.
But I do it when I can. I love to cook, and I love to cook food. We grow tomatoes here right from our garden and a whole host of greens. And
tomatoes. Now, that's where you got me. Good homegrown tomatoes. That's like gold. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. Got a couple minutes left. If you want to quickly let us know what you are doing with your food waste. Interesting that we didn't hear from restaurateurs. Maybe they're too busy because we're in the dinner hour. But the point of it is we're just bringing this down to the last couple of minutes, that there is something that everybody can do, but you first have to make the choice to do it. If you were going to give people one reason, one simple reason, we'll go right around the table very quickly. Nicole, what's the one reason to do it, and what's the first thing you tell somebody to do?
First thing I would say is reduce the amount of food waste you're generating in the first place, because composting and recovering the food resource is great, But ultimately, we don't even want to have to do that.
Because that takes energy, too.
It does, yeah.
Josh?
I'd say educate yourself on what the impacts really are of all this food that we're throwing away. Just do a little research. You'll find some numbers that are pretty staggering.
We put some out earlier today and just say, you know, think about this. Those numbers are staggering.
Exactly. And the impact that it has across the entire food production system, from the, you know, the growing the food and watering, irrigation and transporting and the emissions in the landfill. People, I think, just don't know what all goes into the food that they eat with this global food system that we use.
We're going to take one last caller, Jerry, calling us from IHS. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Beth Ann.
Thanks for calling in. You got about a minute here.
Hey, Beth Ann, I don't have a whole lot to comment on composting, but my point has to do with it's a great big mahalo for our folks and organizations, the food bank in particular, who donate food to IHS. We serve over 750 meals a day. We serve 3 meals a day, 365 days a year. And we have generous support also coming to us from various churches. And we absolutely could not do what we do if we didn't have those donations. So I just was calling to throw
everybody. But people do that anyway, though, Jerry. I mean, when you have people who donate food to you, are you talking about food that comes away from restaurants, hotels, things that are pre-prepared? You're really talking about things that people give to the food bank that winds up in somebody's pantry and they get to do something with it. But do you actually get food from hotels and restaurants too?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the point of it is that helps too, but that has to come to you. That doesn't necessarily mean to, you know, people don't bring food like this to the park and just sort of leave it out. It really has to go from that restaurant or
actually, IHS is one of the agencies that we service.
And
right.
You serve them too, yeah?
Yes, we do.
But you pick it up and you bring it to them.
Right.
Whereas someone said to me, well, you know, what about just bringing it to a park or bringing it to somebody who's hungry? There are more chances that maybe somebody might get sick that way.
Yeah, that's a liability. Yep.
So you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, we shouldn't do that because it's out of control then. You don't know where it's been, how long it's been sitting there, who's handled it. And so it's much better if you are doing it through a process like Aloha Harvest to be able to do that work with the food donor and getting it to the agency.
For you to be able to do that, though, I know you got new trucks very recently, but you're already at capacity.
We are.
What do you need now more than just necessarily more donations of food that you can't necessarily pick up and take? I mean, how about fleet service or something that might give you a hand with transportation?
Yes, we are definitely at the next brink of where we're going from here because we've maxed out our trucks. And the question is, do we pick up another van to pick up the smaller donations because we're having so many pallets of food? Are we getting ready to pick up a third truck? And financial donations would be wonderful for that. Anyone who has something they want to donate to Aloha Harvest, even our space and how we handle that food
You really have become
more
a victim
agencies.
Of your own success.
Yes.
And we have to wonder why we have to have more and more food going to more and more people who are unfortunately hungry and homeless. That's a bigger conversation that we continue to have and will continue to have. Kule Williams, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Josh Prigge for coming in to be with us tonight. And Nicole Chatterson, too. We will continue to talk about what we do with our food, how do we get more of it, and keep it out of the landfills. Go with us on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation and let us know what you're doing. We'll see you tomorrow morning right here for the conversation. And next week, this time around, for Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Good night.